The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Welcome to Down the Garden Path with your hosts, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101. To get on board, send us an email right now, instudio101@gmail.com. Right to your hosts of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing.
Thank you very much, Gary.
And did you want that email brought back up?
No. I guess we can talk about it. But yeah. Yes. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Down the Garden Path, where each week we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes. And we think it's important and possible to have great gardens that are low maintenance. I'm Joanne Shaw, landscape designer and owner of Down to Earth Landscape Design for the past 10 years. It is currently a design-only business here east of the GTA. With me is Matthew Dressing. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, Joanne, and thank you for everything. for having me back, I guess. Anyways, I'm Matthew Dressing.
Putting up with you.
No, putting up with me. That's kind of what I was trying to say. I'm Matthew Dressing, local horticulturist and landscaper, also landscape designer, and I am owner-operator of Natural Affinity Designs, also a design, mainly a design-only business in the GTA, and I've just started.
That's right.
10 years. And we enjoy Down the Garden Path each week, bringing you interesting, relevant, and helpful topics to help you achieve a great garden. We learn right along with you from each other, from our research, and from our great guests that join us here, like tonight. Don't forget to ask lots of questions via social media, emails, and calling in. Well, you can't call in because we have a call-in guest.
That's right. That's right. But you can certainly write us, email, or tweet us. Hopefully, we kind of have our phones on standby, but that can be sometimes a logistical challenge, right? So I am so excited. So there's lots of, as our garden season wraps up, there is lots to talk about as far as, other topics that aren't necessarily related to our individual gardens.
Right.
And right now, it's an exciting time because it's the migration of the monarch butterflies. So I'm excited to have Kylie Bomley back. She joined us about over a year ago now. Before your time.
Before me?
Yeah. So we are going to talk all about her new book, and I'm really excited. It's called The Monarch, Saving Our Most... There we go. There's Siri commenting on our talk. Kylie is author of The Monarch, Saving Our Most Loved Butterfly. Kylie is a writer, photographer, and speaker whose work has appeared in Horticulture, Fine Gardening, and The American Gardener, as well as several industry magazines. She lives in Northwest Ohio, and she writes feature articles for Ohio Gardener, where she also has a regular column each month, and she writes a weekly gardening column in her local newspaper. Her photography has appeared in numerous books, magazines, websites, and trade catalogs. She's the author of two books, Indoor Plant Decor, the design style book for household plants, and of course, her recent book, The Monarch, Saving Our Most Loved Butterfly. Her passion for the monarch butterfly began over 11 years ago, and that is where her book starts, with the beginning of her amazing journey with the butterfly, monarch butterfly. Not only has this journey involved writing this book, it has also involved travel to the monarch special destination in Mexico. And I'm looking forward to talking about all of this with Kylie right now and Matthew. So welcome to the show, Kylie.
Hi, Joanne. Good to be back.
I'm glad you're back. And Matthew, I don't know if you know, Kylie's a fellow garden blogger. So she's someone I've gotten to know over the last 3 years from the Garden Blogger Fling.
From the Fling. Very cool.
That's right. That's right. So I'm excited to talk about this topic. I know you are always excited to talk about this topic.
I am.
And I know it's a huge topic and we only have an hour. We have less than an hour. So I'm hoping we can cover as much as possible. But I know for our listeners, there's so much more. And I really do want to talk a lot, you know, focus on the book so that because we have so much content in the book, we can have encourage our listeners to go out and buy your book.
And buy the book.
Can you just do a little brief summary on, and I know it's at the beginning of your book, but can you just tell us that lovely story about how your journey with the monarch butterfly began?
Sure. My mom and I were going on a trip to Delaware. We were actually going to a garden show at Wintertour, and we noticed as we were driving through on US 30 that there was this little sign that said the Flight 93 Memorial was about 3 miles off the road, 2 or 3 miles. And we didn't have time to stop then, but we decided we would go ahead and stop there on our way home and just, you know, pay our respects. And so this was in September of 2006. So it was the anniversary date, 5 years, you know, since the tragedy had happened. And so we did. We stopped on our way back, and it wasn't then what it is now. Now it's this beautiful, just wonderful memorial. But it was something that, you know, people had erected just temporarily so that they could, you know, pay their respects. So we were there, and while we were there, we heard about the chapel that they had built just outside of Shanksville, and we decided we wanted to go see that. Mm-hmm. So we drove a few miles away, and we went in the chapel and looked around a little bit. We didn't stay real long, but there was this lovely garden right outside that, come to find out later, that the garden local garden club took care of it. They planted it and took care of it. And there was a large black granite memorial there to the victims that were on the flight. And we got back in the car to go back home, and my mom held out her hand, and she said, "Look what I found." I looked down, and it was this dead monarch butterfly. It looked to be in pretty good shape until we looked at it closer. Something had gotten to it, but it had this little white sticker on one of its wings, and I could barely read it, but there were numbers and letters and a phone number and a website on that sticker, and it was no bigger around than the end of a pencil eraser.
Wow.
Yeah, all that information on there. But we put it in the car and drove on home, and then I wrote down the numbers, and as soon as I got home, that's the first thing I did was to go online to figure out, you know, what was this all about. And it took me to monarchwatch.org, where I learned about the tagging program that helps scientists learn new information about the migration, and also about the Monarch Way Station program. Okay. And all of that's administered through the University of Kansas.
Okay.
And that's pretty much what got me started on my journey. In fact, when I looked at the Way Station program, I realized that I was already growing the plants that they required for you to be certified as a Way Station. And so I immediately applied to be certified. Mm-hmm. So we are Way Station number 948. The program began the year before in 2005, and now there are over 18,000 Way Stations,
wow,
registered Way Stations in Canada and the U.S., and there are some that are on some islands off the coast, too.
Oh, wow. We need to do that, Matthew.
Cool.
Yeah, that's definitely. I need to do that to...
You probably already are growing those things.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, there are a lot of people that have Way Stations, but they haven't registered them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good thing to do. And you can do that any time of year, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good thing. You gave me some homework. So after this, you know, that was 11, you said about 11 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
When did you... I want to say when and why did when did you decide that you wanted to write a book about it, about the monarch butterfly?
Well, the migration is what really drew me in, and of course it was during migration season, so there was a lot of information out there, and I, you know, the more I read, the more I wanted to know, and so I was looking for books and what, however I could get my information, and what I wasn't finding was a book that was not either geared more toward children or youth, or at the other end of the spectrum, it was rather textbooky. I really wanted to find something that gathered all the basic information in one place, but yet had enough new stuff, you know, little known things about the monarch, to keep you interested, you know, so that you would learn more than just the normal everyday things that you can find out there. And that was kind of frustrating for me. I mean, I had to go this place, this place, this place, which, you know, that's okay. That's okay, too, because you always learn something, you know, every time you research something. But that's the reason I wrote the book, because I just wasn't finding that kind of book out there.
Well, that's an excellent reason to write the book.
Yeah, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
You are welcome.
And was that, and because that was a process as well, right?
Pardon?
Like that was a, you know, it didn't just happen. I know the book came out. When did the book come out?
It came out in April.
In April. So, and you know, so obviously the lead time before that. So it's definitely something that, you know, you put a lot of time into.
You know, I did, because over a long period of time, because I had been interested in the monarchs for, you know, 11 years now. Mm-hmm. So I had been writing articles and gathering information all along the way. But to sit down and write a book was a whole other thing. And of course, I'd been through that process before, so I knew what it involved. But what I, this is exactly how I did it. You know, I gathered all the information that I had, whether it was something that I had written before or whether it was information I got from other people. And I literally shut myself up in the one of our bedrooms, and I looked at my husband and I said, see you in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And I really did nothing but write for 3 weeks, and it turned into four. I only left the house twice in that whole month.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I would sleep, and then I'd wake up in the middle of the night because I'd think of something, and then I would write. And it was kind of a great way to do it, because when you're on a roll, you just keep going.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you could do that at home, and that you didn't have to go to like some cabin in the woods. Yeah. Right.
Right. Well, I have a husband who's pretty quiet, and so, you know, he's not very demanding, so and he'd been through it before. Mm-hmm. You know, with my first book, so he kind of knew what to expect, and he just kept the food coming, and he was great.
Oh, that's good. That is really good. Well, yes, I mean, you described your book a little bit, and there are many wonderful reviews of your book, but this one, I wanted to read you my favorite review. And I think it sums it up a lot more what we're going to talk about today as well. I found Kylie Baumley's lovely new book, The Monarch, Saving Our Most Loved Butterfly, a riveting tale of biology and conservation. The intricacies of the butterfly's life history, migration, and overwintering biology are engagingly narrated and beautifully illustrated with high-quality color images. Her advocacy of doing everything humanly possible to bring the monarch back from its recent precipitous decline due to human activities is expounded without being heavy-handed. Rich in suggestion of what gardeners, citizen scientists, school teachers, and students can do to help turn the decline around. The book will appeal widely to schools, conservation folks, general readers, and to the gamut of people interested in submerging themselves in what she richly points as a noble cause, saving our most loved butterfly. And that's Dr. Brower. Is that how we pronounce his name? Research professor of biology at Sweetbriar College. So that's a beautiful summary, Kylie. What an awesome thing for him to say.
I will never forget when I got that email. I was in Mexico, and it was the day that I saw the monarchs for the first time down there. And it was that evening, and I opened up my email, and I saw that he had sent it to me and to my publisher.
Oh.
And he had read the whole book before he wrote that. And I was a little nervous because, you know, this man, Dr. Lincoln Brower, is one of the world's foremost authorities on monarchs. He's been studying them since the 1950s.
Really? Oh my gosh.
Yes, and if you look at a lot of the studies that have been done on the monarch, you will see his name on them. Mm. And, you know, I contacted him when I was writing the book because there were a couple of things that I wanted detailed information about. I wasn't really going to write about it in such technical detail in my book, but I needed to understand that myself so that I could translate that into everyday language. Mm-hmm. Because if I didn't understand it, then how could I explain it, you know, to somebody else? And he got a little irritated with me one time because I was so persistent. But he hung in there, I hung in there, and we developed a really nice relationship. In fact, I met him. He invited me down to his house in Virginia, and so I went down there in May and spent several hours at his house. We had a lovely conversation. I wish it could have lasted a lot longer. And then we had dinner that night, but we talked about a lot of things to do with the monarch. And, I mean, he is a lovely, lovely man, you know. Someone who knows that much about that subject, you know, I was a little bit nervous about it, but he never made me feel like he was, you know, that much more than I was. I mean, I just felt like we were on even ground, even though he knows, you know, more than I can ever hope to know about it.
Wow. Well, that's great. Well, and so very much so for him to view your book that way, then it comes even more than from someone like us here, yeah. Right?
Oh, I was thrilled. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely thrilled. I told him he made my day. And then some.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a beautiful story. Yeah. I really like that. So, Kylie, as the migration is now underway, what can we do to help the butterflies on their journey down to Mexico?
Well, I think you there in Canada right now can do, and I know there are still, you know, a lot of monarchs there that are making their way south. They're kind of hanging around a little long.
Yeah, because we've had some unseasonably warm weather, so they definitely...
Right, right. Well, we had a weird spring, too. Mm-hmm. You know, they got the winds pushed them further north. I mean, they came north before we even had milkweed to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
So the weather, you can see that the weather really does affect the migration. But what we can do right now here in Ohio and up north where you guys are, look at what's blooming in your gardens right now and plant more of that.
Mm.
Because they need late season blooming plants, plants that are blooming so that they can gather that nectar to not only fuel the flight for them down to Mexico, but they also need to store fat for the winter.
Mm.
You know, they've got to survive the whole entire winter down there. And if they get good nectar sources, they will actually weigh more when they get down to Mexico than when they left Canada.
Oh, really? Mm. That's interesting.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I just think that's crazy. You would think they'd burn that all up. But you can see why those late season nectar sources are so important to them.
Mm-hmm. You look like you have a question. Matthew's got a puzzled look on his face that you can't see, Kylie.
No, I'm just picturing all the flowers in the gardens.
Yes.
And thinking, you know, what to plant out there. And,
right.
Yeah.
Well, things like New England asters and Joe Pieweed and Black-Eyed Susans and Goldenrod and even some annuals. You know, we have a lot of annuals that will bloom right up until frost. Like cosmos and marigolds zinnias. Oh, they love those.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. My catmint, my Nepeta, has been, they've been visiting that most of the season. I don't know how it's doing. I haven't been out there right now, to see what they're doing out there now. But they've definitely brought, that catmint has definitely brought them to my garden. So that has been really cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's been a good year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the counts are up. And so we just hope that, you know, the things continue on an upward swing like it looks like they are.
Yeah.
They really expect the count when they do it this winter to be up by, 30% over last year. So let's hope.
Okay. And they're counting when they get to Mexico.
Right. They count them when it's the coldest because that's when they gather closest, and you know they're not as active when it's cold.
Okay.
If you have a nice sunny warm day, they're going to be a little more active and not stick around in the trees as much. So they wait until the coldest part of the winter, and then they don't count the individual butterflies, but they count the area that they inhabit down there, and they measure it that way.
So do they count the area in like the square footage in which they take
uh-huh.
over?
Well,
or?
They count it in hectares okay. there, but it's,
okay.
you know, it would be acres for us, but,
okay.
right.
Okay. And can you tell us, now you have visited this place, it's a butterfly sanctuary, can you tell us the name of it?
Well, there are 12 mountaintops where they go, 12 sanctuaries, but only 4 of them are open to the public, and we visited 2 of them. And the one that's the largest and the most well-known is called El Rosario. And we went to that one the first day, and then the next day we went to Sierra Chincua, which is another one kind of nearby. And they look very different, although when you get down into the forest and get, you know, surrounded by those oyamel fir trees, that looks very similar once you're back in there. But the surrounding countryside is a little more open at Sierra Chincua than it is at El Rosario. But you'll get the same flavor of experience when you're in the forest and you look up and see all of those monarchs just huddled in mass.
Wow.
It's just incredible.
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
And what time did you go down? When was your trip? Or when is the best time to go visit if one wanted to do that?
Well, they start to stir around, depending on the weather, of course. Around the end of February, 1st of March, and we were there on March 1st and 2nd.
Okay.
And we were told when we were down there that it was one of the best displays of the monarchs that they had seen in about 10 years.
Oh,
so we got lucky. But
yeah.
It was a nice sunny day when we went to both of them. A little more cloudy the second day, but the first day was really nice and sunny. So the monarchs were pretty active. In fact, before we actually got back into the sanctuary, we took horses up part of the way, and then you have to get off and walk the rest of the way because they don't want to disturb the habitat any more than necessary. And there's a little clearing just before you go back into the forest, and all of a sudden, we just looked over to our right, and down from that mountain came this flood of monarchs. Just flying down. I'm sure they were coming down to get some water from the little streams that go through there. But it was just like you were standing in the middle of a river. I keep telling people this, but it's the only way I know how to describe it. It's like standing in a river, only the river is up around your head, and instead of water, it's butterflies, you know, going by you.
So
and it moved me to tears. It seriously did. I mean, I thought I would cry when I got back in the forest, but it hit me even before that.
Wow. I just can't even imagine that many butterflies.
Yeah, in one spot.
Right. Wow.
And pictures don't do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. I was a little bit disappointed when I looked at my photos because it's so hard to capture that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it really does sound like an amazing bucket list trip.
Oh, it was number one on my bucket list.
Yeah, definitely. So it's something you would recommend? Do you think it's...
Oh, yes. And, you know, before we went down there were a lot of people who said to me, aren't you a little bit afraid, you know, going down to Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm just wanting to do what I want to do. But no, I wasn't. I had talked to a lot of people who had gone down there and some people who actually lived down there. And they assured me that there was really nothing to be afraid of in that area. And, you know, we flew into Morelia, which is an absolutely gorgeous city. And we drove from there to Angangueo, which is near the sanctuaries. Never once did we feel like we were afraid or that anything bad was going to happen. The Mexican people were so friendly, so open, so wonderful and welcoming. And we ran into a lot of Americans who live there.
Mm-hmm.
And We didn't have one single thing go wrong on that trip, and we were there. We were gone for 6 days.
Wow, that's great.
And it was really about as perfect of a trip as I've ever taken, and I've been a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and I just can't even imagine just to see. So this must be special to you, but also for the Mexicans, for the locals, that must be, it must also be something that they're trying to preserve and they're trying to really protect.
Yes, in a couple of different ways, because, you know, when the monarchs come down there, they get there about the time of that they're celebrating Day of the Dead.
Mm, that's right.
Which is November 1st and 2nd.
Right.
And that's about the time that the monarchs all arrive. They'll continue to arrive on into even December, first part of December. But the majority of them, that's when they first see them, that time. And they believe that those monarchs are the souls of their departed loved ones.
Mm.
And so there are big celebrations that go on. And I would love to go down there when they come, when the monarchs arrive, and party with them. But the other thing is that this is their livelihood during the winter.
Mm.
You know, the tourism. They want to preserve that, not just for the monarchs, but you know, this is how they can make a living. And so monarchs are very, very important to the local people there.
Well, that's good. So it's being, you felt like it, you felt comfortable that it was being treated with the respect it deserves.
From what I could see, yes.
Excellent.
You know, I was only there 2 days, mm-hmm. but yes, I do think that, I mean, they're special to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can see that when you talk to the people.
Wow. Such an experience.
Yeah, what an experience that would be.
So when you were there in February, they were just there. It wasn't like they were starting to leave.
No, they were getting pretty active, and
okay.
They were beginning, you know, yeah, about the middle of March is when they start to take off, and like I said, it depends on the weather, but they were pretty active when we were there, so I wouldn't want to go any later than what we went.
So do they tag them, because you'd mentioned the one you found was tagged, so are they tagged kind of north and when they go south, or are they also tagged when they're leaving Mexico?
No, they're not tagged when they leave Mexico. They're tagged in the fall up here.
Up here, okay.
And there are different tagging programs. There's some west of the Rockies. That's a different migration. But the tagging program that we're talking about is east of the Rockies, which is the largest population of the monarchs. And it's just citizen scientists, mm-hmm. you know, like you and me,
mm-hmm.
who are tagging these butterflies, because the scientists can't be everywhere.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a huge help to them, you know, to learn things about the migration. They are learning more all the time. I had the pleasure of hearing Chip Taylor, who started the tagging program and the Monarch Watch program there at the University of Kansas, speak a week ago last Saturday.
Oh, okay.
And that was one thing that he stressed. He said, just keep tagging, because they get so much information from that. You know, they learn the routes they take, how long it takes them to get from point A to point B. You know, not all of them make it. And they'll be found all along the route. But they find an awful lot of them down there that make it, too.
Mm-hmm. And so if people find them on the route, then they can, then that helps, right? If they record those, if they input those numbers, does that help the research
right,
as well?
Right, right. They go on the website and report that they found them, just like the one that my mom found
mm-hmm.
in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah. That is fascinating. And did you ever find out where yours came from?
I did.
Did you?
I did, but it took me 10 years to find that.
Oh my goodness.
You know, as soon as I got home, I checked with Monarch Watch, and they said, well, it's the tagging season right now. We won't really be compiling all that information until spring. Well, you know, spring came, and
yeah.
I kind of forgot about it, and my mom had the butterfly, and so, you know, life.
Yes.
And so I just lived my life for the next 10 years, and I'm in the middle of writing this book, literally about a year ago right now. And I got to thinking about it as I was writing the story about how I got interested. And I thought, I wonder if they ever did find out, you know, who tagged that butterfly. So I contacted Monarch Watch, and they told me who the tag had been sent to begin with, but they had not received information back as to when the tags were actually used,
like
where, you know, where the butterflies were released and all of that. And I won't go into it here because that's kind of like giving away the punchline.
Okay. That's right. So they, we want people to read the book. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, it's an incredible story. Mm. It's one of those stories that, you know, you just can't make it up. And
yes.
I was talking to my editor and I said, Kathy, you are not going to believe the end of this story.
Ah.
And I told her and she's like, oh, my. She said, how wonderful that you found that out now and not after the book came out. And it would have been a shame had I not found that out, you know. And literally, it was like weeks before the book was done that I found that out, 10 years later.
Wow, that's wonderful. Oh, my goodness. We do have
and
a list.
And I got to meet, this year I got to meet the lady who tagged it.
Oh, that's even more special.
That is.
Oh,
uh-huh.
My goodness.
But there's more to the story.
Okay.
There's a lot more to the story.
Excellent.
It's pretty neat.
So our listeners need to go pick up their
go
copy.
The book.
And we do have a listener who's written in. Peter Jonesim has written in saying that he loves the show and he loved the book and that it was excellent.
Oh, great.
So,
that's good to hear.
Yeah. So that is really good to hear. Thank you for writing in, Peter. That is incredible. Yeah,
Peter's there imagining the end of the story that worked. Like what?
Yeah, exactly.
I hate to do that to you, but I never tell the end.
Absolutely, no, you totally should not.
No.
We will not give away the end.
No. Sorry, I'd lost it. A story. So you're obviously very educated about monarchs before you went. Was it expected? Was it what you expected when you went down there and saw everything? Was it, and what was your biggest...
You know, it was. It actually was. And it looked very much like what I'd seen in movies and pictures. If you've never seen Flight of the Butterflies, you really have to see that movie.
Oh,
because
okay.
what it is, it's the story of Dr. Urquhart, who is from Canada. He's passed away now, but he's from Toronto there. And he's the one who... really was instrumental in helping citizen scientists that were down there find the location of the monarchs. Because we did not know before 1975, I think it was, they found them in 75, but they didn't tell the rest of the world until 76.
We kept it a secret for 1 year. We did, as Canadians.
Well, yeah. National Geographic broke the story in the summer of 76, but it's the story of how he helped locate the monarchs because we didn't know where they went. And I graduated from high school in 1974. And when I found out that when I graduated from high school, they did not know where those monarchs went yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that just kind of blew my mind because I guess I'm old or something, but, but no, I was shocked. It's, you know, because that's relatively recent if you think about it.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
The locals knew. The locals knew that they were there, but we didn't. We didn't know where they went. They knew they went down there somewhere, but they didn't know exactly where until that time.
Huh. It's mind-blowing.
So yeah, it was. You know, it was. I had watched that movie, and I had read a lot, and I'd seen a lot of pictures. And it was very much like what I thought it would be, but I was not prepared for the emotional reaction that I had. Because at one point, as I'm standing there looking up at all these monarchs, it hit me that the monarchs that grew up and were born in my garden very well could be right up there in those trees.
Mm.
And when you think about that, I mean, that kind of got me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just the whole process, the more you think about it, the more you just, it's just such a phenomenon, like a natural phenomenon, do we call it? Like, what do we call it? You know, it is, I mean, where they know where to go, that they go there at the same time, like you said, that they arrive on the Day of the Dead, like.
And they go to the exact same spot and they don't have anybody to show them the way.
Yeah.
Their parents have never been there. Their grandparents have never been there,
yeah.
you know, and they go to the exact same spot.
And that's so amazing that I was down at the lake by Ajax, and there was a cluster of them right there on the edge of the lake, just in a little thing of weeds, and they were all gathering there, and they hadn't all left yet. And that's exactly what I was saying.
Right.
How do you know that you're all here? And how do you know where you're going to go next? And where do you guys...
Yeah, and even the fact that because you said, we were saying earlier about how the weather last year was, you know, impacted them a bit in the spring because of the season. But even look at all the incredible weather that's been happening, the weather events that's been happening, you know, between you and us, you know, and how
right.
has the weather not impacted them? How have they not?
Well, it has. You know, it actually has. In fact, last spring, not this year, but in the spring of 2016, they had just released the numbers. And the numbers were up, and everybody was rejoicing that, the count is up. Mm. And then it was not very long, a week or two later, maybe just a week later, they got hit with this horrible storm down there.
Yeah,
and,
I think I remember.
You know, ice and snow and wind and,
frozen butterflies.
You know, it took down trees. And Chip Taylor said a week ago Saturday that, you know, you hear all these kinds of numbers as to how many were killed down there, and he said it's likely that 75% of them were killed.
Wow.
And, you know, with the numbers so low anyway, we can't have that too much.
Yeah, it's
you know, they can't withstand storms like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all the more reason why we need to get the numbers up. And this is not something we're going to do in a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is going to have to be something that is a long-term thing. And we won't really know if we're having an effect on them. I believe that we are, of course. But, you know, we're going to have to get the numbers up and sustain them a little bit before we can breathe, I think.
Before we can really celebrate. I think one of the greatest accomplishments of, social media is very controversial, especially these days, but I think one of the most, you know, amazing things I think that social media to me has impacted has been the plight of the monarchs and the plight of the bees, like pollinators in general. Like, I think social media has definitely spread the word, the pictures, the images, that has been, if it goes down in history as the one of the things that, you know, positives that has come out of social media, I think it has been that, because, you know, it's not like it's an abstract thing. Everybody remembers growing up with butterflies and bees and having them around. And I know I was at a talk just a week and a half ago, and it was just a general talk about the environment and how things have changed with all of our pollinators. And she said, and this lady was speaking, was a little bit older than me, and she was saying, you know, do you remember when you'd go any time of year, you'd go for a drive, or, you know, let's say particularly the summer, with your parents in the car, how many bugs, like how the car was covered in bugs, how the windshield was covered,
I can't believe you just said that.
Yeah.
Because my husband just said that last week.
Oh, that's so funny.
He did. He literally said that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. He said, remember how our cars used to just get, you know, splattered all over?
Absolutely. I think that's why my dad was a serial car washer, because of the bugs. And when she said that, like, I swear the whole little audience, this was the Horticultural Society meeting, everybody gasped, because it was like, yeah, that's true. And now you can
true.
Like, you might have one, maybe two bugs hit your windshield.
Right.
You know?
It's true.
I'm swerving. Like, you know, I've been seeing butterflies, and you swerve in the car, right? Because you don't want to hit the butterfly. But, so it's not just, you know, it's definitely they're the most visible and that type of thing. But, her point was that when those insects are gone, that, you know, the birds, the animals that feed on those insects are also declining.
Right.
Like, you know, it's a chain reaction. And
what Chip was saying too. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, when you lose your insects, you're going to lose the birds too.
Yeah.
Because they feed on them. You know, and the whole insect world is like that. It's a buggy bug world, you know, and we don't like to think that our beloved monarchs are getting eaten, but, you know, they serve a purpose in that way too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take one thing out of that whole chain, there's going to be a void. It's going to cause a shift and a problem. And I think we're seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I'm so excited for you to write this book and for all the scientists before you to kind of give us all this information, because I think that's really important.
It is.
Yeah. And it's great that we can reach another generation, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the kids love it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where it's going to start. If you can get them excited about it, you know, that's what they'll remember. And I don't know if you are familiar with Sarah Dykeman. She's the young woman who is riding her bicycle from Mexico, and she rode up there to Toronto. She went all the way to Toronto.
Did she make it here? I remember seeing her on your Facebook page. Did she make it here? Oh, excellent.
Yes, she did. And then she rode back, and she spent 2 days at our house, and we had some wonderful conversation. But in one of her presentations that she gave, she said something that I thought was really impacted me. And I, you know, I guess I knew it, but just to hear her say it really meant something. And she told people that, you know, we say that, remember how there used to be so many more monarchs when we were growing up? She said, what I don't want to hear is for someday people to say, remember when there were monarchs?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it could happen if we don't keep up the good work that we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that is great that we're focusing on that. And there's more in your book as well that you know, there's other projects and things like that you mentioned that, you know, because I think of us are, you know, our home gardener, you know, people might be wondering, what can I do? What can old little old me do aside from, in addition to planting? You know, I think we've all got the message that we need to plant milkweed and we need to plant, pollinator friendly plants, that type of thing. But your book, you also mention a few, and we do, again, we can't cover them all, but other types of projects that we can do as, you know, if we want to become, what do we call it,
citizen scientists. Yeah. There's a number of programs, and Canada just launched a new one here last week or the week before.
Oh, yes, yeah. It's so funny that you posted that. I'm the one in Canada, but you posted that to our Facebook page.
I kind of have my finger on the pulse of, you know, a lot of things that are going on in the monarch world, but and I'm really happy to share those. But the new program that they've launched is part of a bigger program. It's part of Nature Watch.
Okay.
And it's in association with the David Suzuki Foundation and Nature Canada. And they already have Frog Watch, Plant Watch, Ice Watch, and Worm Watch. And now they've got Milkweed Watch. And all it is for people to report where they find milkweed. Because, you know, if you don't know where the milkweed is, then you don't know where it's not, you know?
Yep.
So you need to know where to plant it. Because with monarchs, the thing that's really important is that we want connectivity. We want there to be a lot of monarch little oases planted around. We don't need big fields of it. We need a lot of little places because monarchs only have so much energy. You know, they need energy to mate. They need energy to fly. And just to exist. And if they have to spend a lot of energy trying to find milkweed, because they don't really go to one spot and just stay there.
Yeah.
You know, they like to hop around. So if we can make these little places where they don't have to work so hard to find it, all the better.
Yeah, that's right. So for our listeners, Milkweed Watch is a program that's run through a team of researchers at Laurier University here and University of Ottawa as well. So it's a website. We can go to milkweedwatch.ca, and that's a great thing that we can all support. Whether it's me, I'm sure even in the U.S., it's something you can have access to that site, right?
Right. I mean, that's an easy thing to do, too. You know, all you have to do is just report what you see.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to go after the show to go on to that website, because on my way to work, I have this tiny little side street. It kind of cuts the corner, and there's this little tiny patch of milkweed that I like to watch through the year. So I'm going to go check to see if it's reported yet.
Yeah.
And if not, I'm going to
do it. Excellent. And there are other things in the book, too, that you can do to help. And, you know, and this probably goes without saying, but even if you aren't a gardener, educate yourself about the problem and what we can do, and talk to people. You know, get the word out. The more, because I'm really surprised at the number of people that I encounter that don't even realize that we've got a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been in the news. It's been, you know, but it's a big world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, not everybody hears about everything. So, you know, the more we can talk about it and have conversations about it, I think the more people are going to care.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you care, then the more you want to help.
Right.
Yeah.
And what about, I mean, we're talking about the Milkweed Watch program. Was there another project that that the homeowners could be aware of, or another couple projects?
Well, there's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And they're listed in the book. I think the majority of them that are listed are in the U.S., but Canada has plenty too.
Okay.
You know, to keep Canadians busy doing that, helping out in that way also.
Excellent. And you, one of the many ways, and I know the Facebook group of your contagious efforts to raise monarchs in your home has also spread to many of our other acquaintances and other bloggers. So that's another way that you've rescued them, you know, from your yard and from surrounding areas, and you've started doing that where you're raising them in your home as well.
I do. I mostly do it toward the end of the season. Because I tag.
Okay.
And, yeah. So, although this year I did raise quite a few even before I started tagging, before the tagging season started, because they're up against so many predators.
Mm.
And, you know, if you can bring them in, the younger you can bring them in, even at the egg stage, the better chance they're going to have to survive, because in nature, the monarch has less than a 5%, and that's being generous, chance of surviving to adulthood.
Wow.
That's not really that unusual for in the insect world. Mm. The mortality rate is pretty high.
Yeah,
but it's just dismal for the monarch. So a female monarch will lay 400 or 500 eggs, and you know only a handful of those will make it.
Wow. So yeah, not only do they have to survive and make the trek to Mexico, you know, when you think about it, they really have a lot of responsibility.
They do. They have a lot on their plate. But you know what? They're tough. It's amazing. You know, you think of this little fragile butterfly, but they're not as fragile as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about them making it down there, I mean, they'll travel 50 miles a day.
Jeez. I know. It's just
amazing.
Yeah, it is so amazing. It is so amazing.
Holy.
So you talk about raising the monarchs in your home as well in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Because that's another.
I go through the steps. I only talk about, you know, raising one or two.
Okay.
I think everybody should raise one just so that they can be witness to the incredible life cycle, because it helps you understand a whole lot when you can see it face to face like that.
For sure. My mother, I don't know, my mother-in-law usually listens, and she may be listening tonight, and she was a kindergarten teacher, so she's long retired, but she used to bring, so back in the day, like, way back in the day would do that, would collect them and bring them into the classroom and have the kids learn about them. So she's definitely a big fan, and I've talked to her, told her all about you, and I said to her, and now they're living in a condo, but I still think it's something, so she really misses her garden, but I think that's something she can still do. And they're big birders, and so she's keeping an eye on the milkweed as well and stuff. So I think that's something I want to do with her next year is do that. So
even if she isn't, you know, doesn't have a garden of her own, I'm sure she has access to some good milkweed.
Yes, definitely. And I feel like I mean, I can barely start seeds and without neglect, and then something happens to the seed. So I don't know that I trust myself to be in the care of a butterfly. partly, but I totally trust her. So I definitely want to partner with someone who's much more responsible than me.
You can help her.
That's right. I know my limitations, and like my good intentions are not good enough in this case. So definitely I'm excited about that for next year. Oh my goodness. I can't, like, we had so much to talk about. I just can't believe how fast time has gone. Please, I hope our listeners really go out and look for your book. It's available on Amazon. It's available at Chapters Indigo in Canada. It's available anywhere books are sold, really, right?
Right, right.
And there is an ebook option too.
That's right.
Excellent. Is there anything else? I know we've touched on this subject, and I hope we've informed and inspired many of our listeners. Is there anything else you'd like to promote or mention about?
Well, I guess we didn't really mention the bit about pesticides, and I wanted to tell you that when I was up there for the Garden Writers meeting this summer, it was in Buffalo, and we went over into Canada one day. And I have to tell you, I'm impressed because it was a noticeable difference when we got into Canada, the number of butterflies and insects that were flying around.
Our herbicide and pesticide ban, I think, is working.
Right,
that's a whole other show, right? But yeah.
I mean, it was really noticeable to me. And so I was really impressed with that.
Excellent.
But, you know, I just think that, you know, we tend to point our fingers at agriculture and the use of Roundup and things like that here. But backyard gardeners have a whole arsenal of chemicals at their disposal, too. And there's more of us than there are farmers.
Mm.
So we need to understand that what we do has an effect, too.
Yes.
Collectively. So I think if we just stop and think a little bit, you know, do we really, really need to use that?
Yes.
You know, just consider it. Just stop and consider it. You know, it may not change anybody's actions, but I think if they think about it and the effect that it's going to have, you know, nobody wants to kill the good bugs or you know, but it all works together. So I think we need to stop and think about that.
Yeah.
That balancing act.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear that the effort, because I know people are so upset here north of about this weeds and all the other challenges that we now have because of the lack of pesticides and herbicides. But it's nice to hear and know that there really is a positive. I mean, sure, it's positive to our health. But it's, you know, positive, it's human health as well, but, also regarding nature. So I think that's hopefully a great thing. It's been several years now, right? That has happened.
Yes.
So it's good to see that there is starting to be a real positive effect.
Yeah, I really noticed it and I was pleased to see that. And you know, I was in Michigan last week and I noticed when we got into Michigan, they don't mow like we do here in Ohio either. And I know Ohio has modified their mowing.
Yes.
You know, for the monarch and other pollinators, but Michigan is really doing a nice job too. And it was beautiful. Their roadsides were gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, all these wildflowers growing and you know, it just didn't look like this scalped lawn alongside the road. It was really pretty.
Yeah. And I think that's where individuals can have an impact, because when we're learning about it from, you know, from you and from online, and then we're mentioning it to our officials and our cities and those municipal, you know, that's, it kind of trickles back that way, you know, it doesn't always come from the top down. I think sometimes it, you know, these great efforts are starting from the bottom up and they need to.
You know, in the book, there's this really neat little story. There's a lot of little side stories in the book, and one of them talks about, I think it's a third grade class, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I wrote it. but, you know, it was in Central Ohio, and the third grade class had a monarch or a butterfly garden, and the city where they were growing that had milkweed listed as a noxious weed.
Oh.
And they went to the city council, that third grade class, and talked to them and got that changed.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So look at that.
So
you know, it's so inspiring. Absolutely. I think that's wonderful. Well,
everybody can do something.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So thank you so much for joining us. I know there were so many things we didn't touch on. I did want to let our listeners know that you were also on a friend of mine's podcast, the Still Growing Podcast with Jennifer Ebling, where I know she was able to go. She's a bit of a longer format, so she was able to go into a lot more detail. So that's worth a listen if our listeners want to know more. Right, Kylie?
Right.
It was a great chat with Jennifer. So, but thank you so much for continuing to share and teach us all about the monarch.
Well, I appreciate you having me on your show and giving me that opportunity to share my love for the monarch.
Anytime. You're welcome back anytime. So you just have to reach out. If there's something new you want to talk about or something new you want to promote, you are welcome here anytime.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you once again, and we'll chat soon.
Okay. Nice to meet you too, Matt.
Nice to meet you too, Kylie. Thanks again for coming on.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it. So once again, the book is called The Monarch, Saving Our Most Loved Butterfly, and it truly is an inspiring story.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't make it up.
No, you can't make that stuff up.
Yeah, no. For sure. So I'm going to thank our listeners for listening in. I know there's not too much happening in our garden as we wrap up the show. Anything exciting happening at the Garden Center?
Nothing really.
Nothing really.
We're in full Christmas mode.
Oh, yes.
Plants are going to sleep and returned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. My driveway's still full of plants because weather's been rainy. I did tell you I did the nematodes.
Yep.
And then it kept raining. So I think I'm good now, right?
Yep.
It's been over a week. That was from Sunday. So I think I'm good. The process was not as difficult as I thought it would be. It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And I guess we wait till next year to see if there was an impact, right?
See how it goes.
But I do, suggest if that was something that had an issue, there's still a bit of a warrant. Are we for timing? Are we too late now?
It's getting close because as it gets colder outside, the soil will cool off and they'll get the signal to bury your grove deeper. So,
okay.
Yeah, there are still people who are still applying them. So,
okay.
And if you're definitely seeing them, don't hesitate.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be warm. Today was cool, but I think it's going to be warm the rest of the week.
Yeah.
So that it might be our last week. So if you need to get out there and get their new nematodes for your grubs and Japanese beetles next year.
Last call.
That's right. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you, Gary.
thank you again,
everyone, for joining us down the garden path here on Reality Radio 101.
Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your hosts Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101.